It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
My cup. Pink via Deckel muss es die kleine Fahrt dem Top. Geht mir kein Sach mit.
Hey everyone, welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I am your host, Judy Gold, and this week we have part one of my interview with Ashley Ray, which I taped over the summer, and what a talent and a delight she was to speak to. You're gonna love her. I also want to tell you about my upcoming gigs, because I need you to come to them. This week, on Saturday, I will be at the Sunshine Cathedral in Fort Lauderdale at 8 p.m. It's a really fun place. Next Saturday, the 28th, I'll be at Soul Joel's inside Sunnybrook, which is in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. On November 6th, I will be for the New York Comedy Festival. I put a show together for the National Coalition Against Censorship, which is I'm on the board of, and it's a fucking great, great lineup. We have Mark Normand, Matteo Lane, Yamanika Saunders, Rich Voss, Adrian Iapolucci. Who else is on it? I think that's it. Well, there's other special guests, like very big name special guests that I can't announce yet. But that's at Gotham at 9:30 on Monday, November 6th. What else? November 11th, I will be at the Marcus JCC of Atlanta doing a performance and a book signing. And that is at 8 p.m. on November 11th. So I have a bunch of gigs coming up, and I would love for you to come. And I have to say, it's been kind of difficult having to perform, considering what's going on in the world. And also, the fact that I've noticed when you say anything online, it is people just take it the way they want to take it, instead of the way you intend it. They just sort of mangle your intent. And I'm talking about when I talk about anti-Semitism, and I'm then blamed, you know, look what you're doing to Gaza. I'm not doing anything to Gaza. Those people, the Gazans, are innocent people that deserve to be live with dignity. I'm an American. I'm an American Jew. And there is an outbreak. Anti-Semitism is up 488%. 488%. Israel was 2% of their population is gone. Hamas is not, they're not militants, they're not resistance, they're terrorists. They are terrorists. And I have to say that the reason Gaza is, it doesn't have water and doesn't have, it's not Israel, it is Hamas. That is their leadership. They have been given money, so much money, and instead of building up Gaza into the beautiful land it could be and building schools and infrastructure and playgrounds and creating jobs, they have built tunnels and they have created bombs and terrorists, because in their charter, the number one thing that they stand for is that Israel doesn't have a right to exist and all Jews must die, okay? So when a Jew is talking about the way they're feeling and that they stand with Israel and that they're worried about the anti-Semitism, we are not saying that Gazans should suffer. We are not saying that. We are not saying Palestinian children should suffer. Okay? That's not what we're saying. Okay? So we've got to stop this vicious cycle. Israel is not an apartheid state, and it's an insult to people who live through apartheid. There are Arabs, as I've said last week, in the Knesset, in their Congress. There are 22% of the doctors there are Arabs. It is a democracy. Many of those people who were murdered were against Netanyahu's policies were for a two-state solution. They were at a peace concert. So stop celebrating in the streets and acting like these people are resisting that Jews deserve to die and celebrating the deaths and the rape and the burning of these innocent people. And yes, the Gazans, those kids and families, same. But I'm telling you right now, Hamas is ISIS, okay? And I'm going to tell you another story that I think is very, very important. About, I don't know, a year or two ago, I had Sally Frischberg on my podcast. She is a Holocaust survivor. And you should listen to that episode. There's two episodes, part one and part two. You should listen to her story and her fears at the time. This is, you know, a couple years ago. And I was talking to her daughter, Leslie. I'm not ringing the bell, but you know I mean to ring the bell. I'm just so upset. I was talking to her daughter, Leslie, and I said, how's your mother doing? Because, you know, she's been through this before. And she said, you know, she's okay. She's watching the news. But she told me, and you really need to hear this. You know, if you listen to the Sally Frischberg episode, you'll know that she was hidden by a Polish family in Poland and lived in a top floor of a barn, in the attic of a barn, for 2 years. No heat, no sunlight, they wore the same clothes, could not stand up straight. 2 years, hidden, freezing. The only sunlight was through the slot, you know, in between the wood, this slit. And she survived, and Leslie's family survived. And Leslie has cousins who live in Israel. And the great-grandson of the righteous people who saved them and hid them, the great-grandson, called Leslie's cousins in Israel to see if they were safe and see how they were doing. 80 years ago, his great-grandparents hid their grandparents. And he, 80 years later, was calling to make sure they were safe. Now it is unimaginable and unbelievable. And it is unconscionable that people would be celebrating the deaths of innocent people celebrating in the streets. This is pure and unadulterated anti-Semitism. So stop it. We don't think Gazans should suffer. We don't think the Palestinian people should suffer. But they are they're ruled by Hamas. And you know, all your gay groups, all the LGBTQIA plus groups who are supporting Hamas, go there. Go there. Be gay. Go there. Go there. Be a woman there. All you people, you know, Rashida Tlaib and what's her name? Ilhan Omar. Go there. Go there and live as a woman. You can't even vote there as a woman. You think you could be in the government? You think you would even have a voice? Feminists? You think you could be a feminist there? Come on, people. No one wants innocent... No one wants innocent lives lost. But this is pure evil. And we have to stop it. Okay, so I just had to get that off my chest, which is sagging. Because I'm so upset, as I know so many people are suffering. But come on. Read a book. Read a book. Learn about the conflict and learn about Hamas. Okay, I just had to, you know, sorry. No, I'm not sorry. But now I'm going to shift gears and you are going to sit back. We're just going to forget about, we're not, you know, we need to take a break from the news every now and then. I feel like I'm constantly watching it because I want to know everything that's going on. I'm so concerned. Did they free anyone? What's going on? And I want you to take a break and listen to this wonderful, wonderful comedian, Ashley Ray, performer. What a fascinating life. You know, get your mind off of this shit. So sit back, relax, and enjoy part one of my interview with Ashley Ray. So you're fifth generation Texan, and then you moved to Rockford, Illinois at a very young age. But can you just tell me about your roots in Texas? That's incredible that you're the fifth generation living in Texas.
Yeah, my family, they've been there for forever. As far as I know, they started with some Irish potato farmers who, mm-hmm. you know, slept with some of the slaves who lived next door. Somewhere in there, my family came out of the mix, and they moved to Waco, Texas. And so most of my family lived out there until they moved closer to Dallas. The family motto is like, you're born in Texas, you die in Texas. Mm-hmm. And I think that will be true for me.
Right.
But I can't live there. I just can't do the middle part because it's, you know, I think my family stays there.
Yeah.
Yeah. They like the adversity. You know, my grandma was always like, oh, and, you know, my great grandmother was kicked by a white man and that made her so strong. And I'm just like, not for, you know, oh, goodness.
Do you typically... descendants of slaves have very little to go on. They have, you know, they don't have records like white people have. And yet, you're somewhat of an anomaly that you have this history that you know about, which I bet you feel really lucky about that.
Yeah, we're pretty rare. Like my family, somewhere along the line, Cato June, who was my great-great-grandfather, he got his freedom. So he started tracking the family line so we can take it all the way back to South Carolina and when we came over and then where his three brothers went. And then my family, like we have family reunions every year and they have a book that's been passed down for I don't know how many decades.
I love
with
that.
Our family. Yeah, it's like with our family stories. Most of them, I think I learned as I grew up, were lies. They were complete lies. One of them was that someone in our family invented the match and the cover of the book is like a lit match. That's like we guide the way.
Right.
And then in 10th grade, I was like, actually, my great, great, great grandfather invented the match. He was a slave and a white man stole the idea. And my friend were just like, a French guy did that. It was like, they're just like, it wasn't even in America.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. But I love that. I love that. And did they come over as slaves or were they were brought over against their will? Let's remember this, Ron, you fuckhead. So they're brought over here against their will and treated as 3/5 of a person. And yet, 5 generations. So fuck you, Ron fucking DeSantis.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. And the governor of Texas. That guy sucks too.
He's a piece of shit.
I fucking hate him.
Okay. So as a kid, I love this. Your mom had a daycare center in the house.
Yeah.
Now, was this one, your father died when you were 14. I'm so sorry for that. But did she have the daycare center when your father was alive?
She did, but my dad lived in Texas still. So he had a, you know so much about me. I'm just going to say everything. I was a love child. So my dad was already married and my mom was pregnant with me. And so he hid my family.
I couldn't find that anywhere. I was like, siblings. I couldn't find that anywhere.
I have 8 brothers and sisters because my mom took me to Rockford to be raised, but my dad stayed in Texas. He would come up every summer and I would spend time with him and his family. So
the 8 kids. He had 8 kids.
Yeah, from his first marriage and then his second marriage. And then his family was up in Milwaukee, which isn't too far from Rockford. So I could spend time with them. But the daycare, my mom, when she decided to, leave my dad because he lied about having a family and all that stuff, she was like,
"What? A man lied about having I just passed out. Can someone get me some smelling salts? Ashley, first of all, that could never happen now because of social media. But when I think about that you can't, I always say, you can't have another family now because of, but.
He was the last generation that could do it, I feel like.
How do you have time to have another family and make and lie?
He had to have he had a motorcycle and he would always come see me on a motorcycle. And I was like, that's just cool. That's my dad. And then later I found out it was because they only had one family car and he couldn't take it.
Right.
But when I was in kindergarten, I wrote a happy Father's Day letter and got his address from something my mom had and I sent it. And his kids and second wife found it. And that's when they were so you have another kid.
Wow. That's such a great story.
So I blew the story open.
Did that wife then go fuck yourself? Or did she
stay with him? She stayed and she was you got to figure that out. And she was very nice to me. Very welcoming and stuff.
Oh, that's nice. So she wasn't a doormat. Okay.
No. She showed me how to use a tampon actually. So
wow. Shout out to her. That's an exciting thing for a young woman.
It was.
You know what, Ashley? They didn't have tampons when I got my period. I had to wear pads. And fuck anyone who's listening who doesn't want to hear about this. Too bad. I had to wear a belt. Okay? It was a little... Yeah. Have you ever seen these? It's a little belt. And then it has the thing, like a girdle hook in the front and the back.
Yeah.
And you have to put... And it was huge because... And I was in the marching band. It would go back and forth and back and forth while I was marching and get all – it was awful. So you know what? Don't tell me it's hard to be a guy, okay? It's nothing. It's so fucking easy.
It's nothing, okay? Having that stuff – oh, God. And
what
now,
kind
I
of
feel
tampon
like,
did you use? Did you use an OB or the one with the
applicator? Oh, no. It was always with an applicator. I can't do the OB. It's I'm not – I wish I was that in tune with me, but I'm not. Sorry.
I know. You got to put it on your finger and get it and slide. Yeah. Okay.
And now I feel like the people love the period panties again. It's like they like this diaper thing that you know. And I can't get into it. They get too heavy.
And then what about the cup? That little cup you put in there and then you'd – no.
No, thanks. No, thanks.
Take care.
I'm so clumsy.
Yeah, no. Okay. So as a little girl, you are sort of like the cool house because there's all these toys and a slide in your living room. And you were very – and people wanted to come to your house. And then, of course, that they outgrew that. But before we get to that – you would perform stand-up sets in elementary school. You would literally verbatim perform these stand-up sets. I have never in all my years heard of – I knew people who were fans of comedy, but never before was a kid actually taking the stand-up of a comedian and performing them. Where did you do this and what – did your teacher say?
Yeah, I went to this really tiny private school that I think encouraged artists, no matter what you were doing, they were like, go for it. Every year they had a one-month program called Fine Arts Week, where every morning we would start the day with performances from students for an entire month.
Oh my God.
Any student could sign up. It was from like 6th to 12th grade. You'd have like 7th graders who would just be like, I just want to get up there and sing the Pokemon theme song. Right. And the school would be like, we encourage, your creativity. And so I would just sign up and go up there and do full Mitch Hedberg sets.
I know. I love that you loved Mitch Hedberg. You know, I
was obsessed with him. And I was just like, my friends, they don't know about this. They're not watching Comedy Central late at night. And everybody thought I was so clever and funny. And I was just like, I know all the funny stuff. Yeah.
You know,
I stole all these jokes.
And kudos to your mother. Your mother wanted to make sure that you got a scholarship to the school, and your mother wanted to make sure you knew how to act and be and survive, and not only survive, but excel around white people. I find that is a fucking good mother. You know, I don't know if you know this. Paul Robeson. Do you know Paul Robeson?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
He went to Rutgers, as did I. And when they had a child, they moved to Germany to put the kids in boarding school there because Russia, because there was no racism. And he wanted his kids to grow up in a place where people did not treat you differently because you were black. And, you know, I fucking love your mother. I think smart.
Yeah. All the choices she made, starting the daycare, that was her being like, I'm a single mom, I'm taking care of my kid. And she hated that she would leave me at daycare. So she said, I'll start my own daycare and turn the entire first floor of our house into that. And then when it was time for me to go to middle school, I got the opportunity to test for this scholarship. And she was like, I want you to go to this school so you're not intimidated by these rich white kids. And you realize you can have the same opportunities. They're not special. They're not smarter. They're just rich.
Right.
And that's exactly what I learned, is that these rich kids, they are not that smart. They're doing so many drugs. The tiny private schools, that's where the kids are doing the drugs and the crazy stuff. And then I was just there like, I'm here to learn Latin.
Right. So. And also, you realize as you get older, the rich kids are rich because of their grandparents. It's not, it's not, you know, rarely is it, oh my God, I worked my ass up. You know, those are just, they're very few and far between. Hey everyone, you know what I just did? I poured. And I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your ordinary can't speak. Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome. You would print out weekend update scripts and put them in a binder.
Yeah.
And practice them.
I would practice them and make my friends perform it. I would do it at school, make people join me, especially during that fine arts week. I would just get up there right. And completely recreate Weekend Update and force people to have fun and do this with me.
First of all, I want to know who were your top Weekend Update in the history of SNL? Who do you think were the top Weekend Update anchors?
I'm going to go number one, Norm.
Norm's great.
Delivery taught me a lot. That was the one I always felt like I want to nail this deadpan.
Right.
You know, that informs my humor today. And then after that, Tina Fey. I was
the best.
Yeah. I was a big Tina, Amy, and Tina and Jimmy. Really, Tina and anybody. Yeah. I was
Tina is otherworldly. And so likable.
I'm pretty sure I did also perform some of your sets, Kathleen Madigan, Maria Bamford.
No way! I love you so much! Ashley!
I was such a comedy nerd.
Oh my God! Oh my God, that's so nice.
I used to listen to the Something Awful forums, and people would record like your sets at the Cellar or whatever, wherever right. You were on tour, and they would upload them online. I would download them as like a middle schooler, and every week I would like rank my favorite comics based on these like new sets I was hearing on this like choppy recording.
Oh my God, I love that.
And I would
that.
Always just be like, Judy, Maria Bamford, Kathleen Madigan, you're my favorites.
Oh, so. I love you. Okay, you went to journalism camp.
Yeah.
Okay. This brings nerddom to an entirely... I mean, I went to music camp, and that was really nerdy.
Yeah.
But you went to... Now, first of all, how old
were
you?
That's not even the... Oh, God, yeah. I was like 15 at this point.
So your 15, father had... 15. First of all, we yeah. kind of went over... You know, we didn't talk about your father's death, which... You know, you had this sort of odd relationship with him because,
yeah,
you know, and it's so funny. My father died when I was 27, which, you know, I didn't think was that young because I knew people who lost their parents when they were young like you. But now my son's 27 and I go, oh, my God, that was, yeah. you know, young. But you lost your father. Like, first of all, how did you deal with your grief? And how did you deal with your grief in relation to these eight brothers and sisters and, you know, and the rest of his life, you yeah. know, it must have been because, you know, as I say, once a parent dies, you are a completely different person than you were before.
Oh yeah. I realized the second I heard the news, I was like, oh, I'm never going to be this little girl that I was again.
Right. Who, you lose your innocence. Yeah.
Yeah. I completely changed. And at that point, you know, my brothers and sisters with my dad, they all knew about me. His wife knew about me. So I went down there immediately, but I was still a secret to most of the people in his social circle. Most of his like other side of the family, his wife's family didn't know me. So right. at the funeral, everyone was just like, who's this girl
who looks are you?
Just like him?
Right.
The pastor like said, let's pray for his children and listed everyone but me. And my grandmother had to like shout my name from the,
wow.
from the audience.
It's like Biden and the grandson.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he's like, and Ashley. Yeah. And I was just like, this is the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to me. Great. Everyone's looking at me and wondering who I am. But they all just embraced me. And it was truly, we're family. We're always going to be family. He wanted us to be family. So we'll support each other. And we're all still really close.
Oh, good. I was going to ask. Yeah.
But we were all really close. But I think for me, my way of processing it was to stay busy. I immediately, the day after his funeral, had to go to theater camp. My mom couldn't get a refund on my, right. they refused to give a refund. They were like, we don't care if her dad died.
That's
if she
so
doesn't come.
Awful.
Right.
God. Yeah.
Right. I call him out every chance I get. Northern but, Illinois University, DeKalb Summer Theater Camp. It was messed up. You made me go.
That's terrible, okay? DeKalb.
Yeah. Horrible.
Seriously?
I had to go to theater camp where my first day there, day after my dad's funeral, they're let's play Zip Zap Zop. They're like, everyone, let's do your Rose and Thorn and for your first day of camp.
And I'm like, my dad just died. Yeah.
So
terrible.
And I was just a horrible, sad, mean person the entire first week of camp. Every time people are trying to have fun, I'm like, oh yeah, well, my dad is dead.
My father did.
Yeah. They're like, we're going to play an improv game. And I'm like, my dad can't improvise life. It's just things that made no sense. And eventually people.
Can you be a tree? No, because my father's dead, you asshole.
My dad died, okay? And, you know, the camp counselors pretty much did not try to make me follow rules. I would sneak out and smoke cigarettes, and they were like, her dad died. Let her do her thing. But I ended up embracing a lot of comedy. Eventually, my friends started kind of making fun of me, and I just started laughing about it and was like, you know what? I think this is a reason I should be a funny person. What am I doing here?
Yeah. Do you think, because the people you have mentioned that you sort of emulated or, you know, would listen to, they're all very unique voices. I all struggle with mental health stuff. Do you think, you know, because comedy is such a coping mechanism, I mean, for you to be that young and to realize the power of stand-up, you know, that's pretty emotionally intelligent that you that grief and, you know, most people do it unconsciously.
I think my therapist today would say, oh no, I wish you'd learned a different trait because now you just make jokes every time I bring up anything serious.
Oh my God, mine too. And I'm just like, too bad. That's how
I think. It's how I find the beats. It's
right.
You know, so after my dad died and I go to theater camp, I realized like if I could make my mom laugh, she would be like, oh, Ashley's okay. She's laughing. She's like getting her work done. She's still pretending to be comedians at school. So
do you think that was about you or her? Do you think that
it was definitely about her? I hated seeing my mom sad, and obviously losing my dad was hard for her too. She loved him a lot,
right?
You know, they had a difficult, you know, relationship,
right?
But it was so sad for her.
Yeah,
and you know, I hated seeing her sad. She's more emotional than me. I had to kind of step into this position of being just, I'm the logical one. I'm the one who's like, this is what needs to be done. Like, mom, stop crying. Like, I'll figure this out.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also you're 14 dealing with this. You're like,
yes. Also, I'm 14.
Yeah. So you,
and my only outlet is comedian.
Right. That is the mark of a true stand-up. I mean, there's so many people who don't get the craft and what it's about. And, you know, reading about you, I was like, wow, at such a young age. I mean, I remember watching Joan Rivers and realizing, oh, I can speak up. I can be loud and I can, you know, get back at people, you know, in a way. And yet my parents loved her and, you know, it really, when you grab onto a comedian or comedians, cause I hate that fucking word, you know, and use and understand that it freaks me out. Okay. You then went to journalism camp. Why did you go to journalism camp? And I didn't even know there was fucking journalism camp. And what the fuck did you write about what was going on in camp? Like, what was that like, journalism camp?
It was in Charleston, Illinois, which is middle of nowhere. It's like where Jimmy John's, the fast food restaurant, was founded. That's its biggest claim to fame.
Wow.
But it's a small little town. And you go there, you pick a topic you're going to write about. It can be a local business, something happening in the community. And you spend 3 weeks working with professors on campus, the journalism professors, finishing the story. You go to like the Illinois State Senate and learn how to interview people in state Congress.
How old were you?
Gosh, I think I was 15. I was trying to remember because I was dating. I had like my high school boyfriend who I had lied to him about my age.
Right.
And told him I was 16, but I think I had just turned actually 15.
Right.
So,
what made you want to go to journalism camp?
I always wanted to be a writer. My mom had the daycare, I would write like the weekly daycare newspaper, and I just started doing it. As soon as I could write, I would do these little updates like, today we're going to have recess, and for lunch there's mac and cheese, and just my horrible handwriting.
Right.
And that just kind of evolved. I started writing for my local paper, the Rockford
Register. I know that. You interned at the local paper. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of figured, oh, if I go to this journalism camp, it'll give me an in with some people who maybe could get me a job or a summer internship at a paper. So, and also
God,
I got an,
so you ambitious.
Got an, you got an Illinois Press license card if you did it. You got to join the Illinois Press Corps. And with that card, I could get press credentials to any concert I wanted.
No fucking way.
Yeah. For the rest of high school, my friends and I, we went to Warped Tour, Lollapalooza, every single thing with press passes, because I would just be like, I'm in the Illinois Press Corps. I'm covering this for my local paper.
And oh, my God. Say, okay. I love that.
They'd be like, yeah, you're 15. But OK, we believe. Yeah, this works.
Hey, everyone. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? And I'm one of them. You're listening to one of them. Fast Growing Trees has everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and your space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Forever. I just want you to know that I just got off a plane and I walked in my apartment. What was the first thing I did? Is I came in and said hi to Avi, my fig tree. I'm telling you, and I have Yael, which is another plant, but Fast Growing Trees has changed my atmosphere here in my apartment. You don't need a lot of space, but they do have, you know, they have stuff for outdoor spaces. But I live in an apartment, and I'm telling you, Avi and Yael, yes, they're both Jewish names, Hebrew. The space looks so much better. And I just had a conversation with Avi. Like, I was like, I missed you. I love having living things here. It's very, very, I don't know, it's made this more of a home. It's the best. And Elisa has some too. And she loves them. And she talks to them too. But she got that from me. Anyway, check out Fast Growing Trees. You need to be around plant life. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You're welcome. You sort of transformed at 14, 15 because kids were no longer interested in, you know, playing in your house. And you were in this, I'm going to be the best in this fucking school mode and I'm going to prove myself. And you sort of survived on academics.
Very true.
And you spent a lot of time alone because you said that, you know, it was so busy downstairs that you, after a while you were like, I can't listen to this cacophony of these kids and this and that. And a lot of kids who had spent time alone at that time would probably be druggies or go play video games 24/7. Like, but you really focused on academics.
Yeah. I going to this really rich kid school in fourth grade, by the time I was in sixth grade, which at that school, sixth through 12th graders are all in the same building. So I was in sixth grade and all my friends were juniors in high school. My friends were like 17, 18 years old. So by the time I was in seventh grade, I had started using drugs already. People at my school would just do coke and stuff in the bathroom. And I was like, well, if I'm going to do it, middle school makes sense because no one cares about this for college.
Right. Oh, my God. I can't believe that's what you
said. Yeah. I was like in seventh and eighth grade fully using like Percocet. I was stealing it from my grandparents and selling it. And then I was like, oh, you know what? It's time to go to high school and care about college. I got to put the drugs aside. And
I fully stopped
smoking pot, sobered up, and was like, let's focus on high school. And mostly it was that my school was so racist. It was so racist. And the teachers encouraged it. Just some examples. Kids would leave chicken bones outside of my locker.
Oh, my God.
They would play a game called Throw the Jew in the Can. There was only one Jewish kid in our class, and they would throw him in a trash can and throw pennies at him. And the teachers would, like, stand around and be like, throw the Jew in the can. And everyone was just like, this is normal. This is,
And they didn't do a fucking thing?
They didn't do anything to stop it. Like,
all right,
I would
go Ashley.
Oh, I was going to say, there was one time one of the kids, there were only three girls in my class, and the girl was like, I don't want Ashley to come to my sleepovers because black people steal, but the other girl can come to my sleepovers. And instead of being like, that's racist, the school said she's allowed to do that. Instead, Ashley can go to sleepovers with the boys.
And that's fuck. Oh, my. I love that you're laughing at this.
Yeah, I never threw the pennies.
Because it's so stupid.
Yeah, I never threw the pennies. I was one of the ones going, hey, guys, I know Borat is making this, like, very popular right now, but I do feel like something is weird about this.
Were you friends with the Jew kid?
Yeah, actually, we were really good friends. And when they made me do the boy sleepovers, they were always at his house. He would invite me. His mom was so sweet to me. And they would just like make a section in his room where he'd be like, this is where you can watch movies and be a girl. We're going to go like play Call of Duty and Halo on our LAN network downstairs. It was just
he tried to take
he really
out.
Did. It was, you know, people tried. It was still just everyone accepted the racism. When I graduated, a white guy I thought was a friend of mine. For my graduation present, he bought me like two giant things of grape Kool-Aid. And this
was
like in front. Oh, it's like a
racist.
Yeah, it's like a stereotype that black people love grape Kool-Aid and it's like all we drink.
Oh, God,
it's like old school racism.
And you know, it comes from their parents. It all comes from their parents.
And honestly, it was one of those things where when it happened, I didn't even realize. I just thought, oh, did you think we didn't have enough drinks for the party? Like, do you want me to take it? And he was like, no, that's your gift. Cause black people love Kool-Aid. And my mom, her church pastor is there, all these people, and they wanted to fight him. And I was just like, please, he doesn't, he's stupid. He thinks it's funny. He thinks it's ironic racism.
He's a dumb idiot. Yeah.
Just leave him alone.
Oh,
so
that pisses me off.
I wanted to prove all these racists wrong. And at my school, it was so competitive. You knew who the top students were. If you took extra classes that showed you were a better student. So the kids who just took Spanish, they were kind of seen as the lazy students. So I took ancient Greeks, Latin, and Spanish. I took three different art classes. I took tech theater and regular theater. I did as many classes as I could, all the extracurriculars. I was in musicals, plays. I was on JV soccer, Amnesty International. I just anything. I would just do it all to be like, you racist. I can be better than you. I'm gonna get into a better school than you. And you're just white. So
I love that. Fucking go, Ashley. That is, that's my girl.
Yeah, it made me a really competitive asshole. It really did. If in high school, I truly was such a competitive jerk.
But it's good for the showbiz, I'll tell you that much.
Honestly, yeah.
Okay. You then go to Williams College, another whitey white from Whitesville, whiter than white. I mean, my son plays, you know, he's the captain of the Trinity basketball team in Hartford.
Oh, yeah.
And he talks about the racism constantly. And they're all, you know, because he's just played basketball his whole life. He has, you know, when he went to Trinity, he was like, Mommy, these cars. They all have cars. They're all white. You know, like he couldn't
Yeah.
Believe it. That's not how he grew up. And why did you choose Williams?
At the time, they were the first no-loan college in the country. So if you went to Williams the year I applied, you would not have to take out any loans. They would cover everything with scholarships or merit-based money. So my first, I went abroad 1 year and then they made me take loans out. But basically all 4 years, I never had to take out loans.
Wow.
They paid for all of your textbooks. And that was the only reason I found this information. And I knew, you know, my mom did not make a lot of money. I didn't get a lot when my dad passed. So I knew I could not afford to go to NYU like I wanted to.
Right.
So I thought I want to go to the best school I can that is financially feasible. And that day I got like a pamphlet from Williams that was like, we are no loan now. And
you were like, bing, bing, bing. So
yeah, and I applied. They also had a program called Windows on Williams where they flew out poor kids and they paid for everything. It was like probably only my third time on a plane. They paid for it, pay for your like this nice car to drive you to campus,
yeah,
which is
it's
all
very
a lie.
Liberal there. And great theater program.
Wonderful theater program.
And
I fell in love. I saw the campus and I was like,
so
this is where
cute.
I want to go. Yeah.
Did you ever it's so white. It's like your school. It's like the school you went to high school.
Turned up to 11. Like I went from going to school with rich kids who had elevators in their houses to kids who were like, oh yeah, I'm one of the princes of Jordan.
Yeah.
Jim Cramer's daughter went to my school.
Wow.
And at one point, like a helicopter picked her up. And I was just like,
oh,
what?
So did you ever work at the Williamstown Theater Festival in the summer or...
I did. I did it. That would have been the summer after sophomore year. I worked that in Reunion, which staying on campus during the summer, it's such a small town. Like the closest grocery store is 30
minutes away. Yeah,
I did
the festival. I've done
it. Oh, so yeah. So you know how isolated it is there.
Yeah. But
yeah,
it's great when you're working on a show or you're, you know, it's really
separate.
It's a beautiful theater there.
Yeah,
I
for me,
it.
I was just like getting drunk and trying to just make.
That's unusual.
I was a college kid getting drunk and just making tips and trying to find something to do. We would mostly buy six packs and sit around like fires. You know, there's a lot of hiking you can do over there. But you'll just meet all these amazing celebrities who are there for the festival.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, who's that guy? Oh, he was in A Star Is Born. Everybody loves him.
Oh, what's his name?
The recent
A Star Is Born?
Or the recent one, Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper.
I was hungover as hell, walked into the sandwich place, and there's Bradley Cooper sitting right there. It was great. Justin Long, wonderful.
Yeah. You graduate. You go to Chicago. Why do you think you chose Chicago over New York?
I missed the Midwest. I missed the
Midwest.
Yeah,
you seem to...
I love the Midwest. I loved growing up there. Most of my friends had gone back to Chicago, but I wanted to go to New York. I felt like that was how I was going to challenge myself. It was how I could do creative stuff. But then my friends got an apartment and they had an extra bedroom and they were like, come on, just come to Chicago. You love it here. You can get work in TV or advertising here. Come on. Which not so true, but yeah.
But you were very into storytelling. And you did spoken word and storytelling competitions.
Yeah, the mob.
And you moved to Chicago. You get a job at The Onion. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And you're writing ads for them.
Yeah, they let me write funny ads. There would be brands who'd be like, we want that Onion humor for, you know, David's Bridal.
Right. And you realize, wow, I could be a comedy writer, and you start going out because did you get sick of the story? You didn't like the audiences.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't,
I didn't like
the Chicago
audiences
with the storytelling.
You know, and with storytelling, it's a deeper thing. I would go into the more emotional sides of things, but I just liked the funny parts. And I hated after when the audience would come up to me and be like, that was so moving. That was so sad. Oh, I'm so sorry that that happened. But and finally, Sarah Sherman, who is on SNL now, Sarah Squirm. Yeah, I love her. She was hosting an open mic at this bar, Kohl's. And she was like, you know, why don't you just do the funny parts? Why don't you just get on stage and just do the funnies
and
parts
you
of
felt,
the story?
I read that you felt like they were sort of pandering. Oh, you're this Black woman who, and you were just like, nope, I'm not doing this shit.
They
I'm not going
to
be your little,
They expect you to do like the spoken word beat where it's like, and when I found myself after, and it's like, I hated it.
And then they can be, I'm not racist. Cause I like, really, you know, that whole fucking shit.
And she's serious. And I love this, I love this poet. Right. And I didn't want
that.
I
had a friend who once said to me, I don't know if I've said this on the podcast before, but Rent had just come out on Broadway and they went to see Rent and they were like, I really understand your community now. I'm like, you do not understand. You saw a fucking musical.
You saw Rent.
Okay. Okay. Go visit my friends who are lying in, you know, hospice care or in, I don't even know if they had hospice, but lying in the hospital. And the parents have disowned. Like, shut the fuck up. I hate that shit. Thank you so much for listening to part one of my interview with Ashley Ray. Part two, of course, will be next week. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, and marketed and clipped and everything else by Brittany Jo Sowards Richmond. As I mentioned before, I am on Le Road. I had such a great time in Women's Week. We sold out every show and had to add a show, which was so wonderful. So thank you for everyone who came out to support me during Women's Week. I also want to say that I am at, as I mentioned, I'm in Fort Lauderdale this Saturday the 21st at the Sunshine Cathedral. Soldiers inside Sunnybrook at Pottstown, Pennsylvania on the 28th. November 6th, I am doing a benefit at Gotham Comedy Club in New York City for the National Coalition Against Censorship, full of stars. Full of stars. And I will be in Atlanta. That's right, Atlanta. On November 11th at the Marcus Jewish Community Center. And I'm getting a total knee replacement on November 20th. Okay, so that'll be a great, that's a good times right there. So anyway, I want to thank you for listening. We need peace. We need peace. And we got, you know, you got to stop with the fucking anti-Semitism. We are 0.2% of the population of the world. Stop it. We don't want any of this. And we don't support any of this. So stop it. What else? I don't know. I hope you enjoyed the interview and forgot about all this shit for a while. And I love you all. And thank you all for writing about my last week's podcast. I really thank you. I was like, oh, what am I going to do? And I felt like I had to do that. And I really appreciate your words of support. And I'd like to do it more often, actually. So maybe I'll start a Patreon. Oh, yeah. But anyway, I love you all. Thank you all so much for listening. And I mean, if you're still listening, but God only knows. But thank you. I appreciate it. And as we always say, so long.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.